Ignition sequence start.
See, Elijah Wan has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three, hit it!
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer.
Yes! Paul touch it up!
Thompson steps right, shoots for the win, a three, he got it!
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook.
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary. Not for us.
They might have fallen asleep there for a little bit in the fourth quarter, but at least they got the win. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I am your host, Jackson Gatlin. You can find me at JT Gatlin on Twitter. The show is also on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. And past that, if you enjoy what we do here at Locked On Rockets, please do me a favor. Follow us, subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Himalaya, all those different platforms that you listen to your podcasts on. If you could do me a favor, subscribe to us, maybe write a review if you've got the time, leave us some stars, ideally five of them. I'll settle for four, but ideally five, if you enjoy what we do here at Locked On Rockets. The Rockets beat the Dallas Mavericks in Houston 128-121, improving the team to 30-18 on the season. They finally grab up their 30th win on this season in 48 games played. The Mavericks fall to 29-19, 16-7 on the road, so a pretty strong road record for the Dallas Mavericks. The Rockets 16-7, identical, but at home. This actually shifts the Western Conference standings around just a bit, and it's great because the Rockets are now tied up in the season series with the Mavericks at one game apiece. They also hold the season series currently over the Utah Jazz 1-0, over the Clippers 2-1, and are tied with the Denver Nuggets 2-2. They are also down on the season series 1-2 against the OKC Thunder, and then against the Lakers, they are currently 0-1. So that's kind of how they stack up against the rest of the Western Conference. So now the Rockets now a whole game ahead of the Dallas Mavericks and just two games back of the Utah Jazz for the fourth seed. So after all that was wrong with the month of January for this team, it seems like the ship is maybe settling a little bit. I'm not going to say that James Harden is back because he's definitely not back. But the effort level by the team overall in this game felt loads better than it did against the Portland Trail Blazers because the team just looked like it was going through the motions in that one. In this game, they came out strong, 35-28 first quarter, pretty good energy there. Second quarter, you lost, 32-30, not a huge deal, kind of matched the Mavericks kind of point for point, but the energy was there. And obviously, this is a Mavericks team that's not at full health, right? They're missing Dwight Powell, they're missing Luka Doncic, who's kind of a, important player, right? He's kind of the best player on the team. So it's important that they're missing him. So this isn't necessarily a win that you're happy about because they should have essentially blown out the Mavericks without Luka. Because you think that if they had Luka, they might have handled the Rockets pretty easily. There were points in this game, especially in that fourth quarter, where they did kind of fall asleep at the wheel. And you were worried that maybe the game was going to, go the Mavericks way instead. But James Harden, look, he's not back, but he's semi-back. Shot 6 of 14 from behind the three-point arc, so he actually hit some threes in this one. 9 of 10 at the charity stripe, so he got to the line a little bit. Rebounded the ball well, 16 boards on the evening. Just 6 assists, a little low for him, but 4 steals, 35 points, but 10 of 25 shooting overall. He struggled mainly because he still can't get to the rim, which is why I'm saying he's not back yet. It's just watching him in this game and watching him kind of move around the court, you can tell there's something wrong. You can tell he's labored. You can tell that he's not moving at full speed, which is why I was so persistent in the post-game pod after the Trailblazers loss that, look, if Harden is if he is demanding to play, if he is determined to play through whatever injury this is, playing himself back into, his peak form or whatever, then he has to adjust how he plays, right? And he did that maybe not completely in this game, but there were points where he actually did kind of spot up shoot the ball, where he didn't, you know, isolate into a three-point shot. The one that really comes to mind is there was, and I'm not 100% sure if this was an out-of-timeout play or not, but the Rockets ran, you know, a series of actions, and they got James Harden a wide open 3-point look that is usually reserved for Eric Gordon with the ball handler, you know, at the top of the key, and then kind of a flare screen off on the wing, and then James Harden drained a wide open 3-pointer doing that. So obviously, you know, that play is usually designed and set up for Eric Gordon or sometimes even Daniel House, Ben McLemore maybe. Usually the Rockets wing players take that shot, but James actually took that shot. So again, 10 of 25 shooting is not great for James, but he contributed in other ways too. He was rebounding the ball really well in a game where you were missing Clint Capella, where you didn't play a player taller than 6'6", which we will get on that more in a little bit because it is mind-boggling that they did that and they still managed to lose the rebounding battle. Even with James securing 16 rebounds, they lost the overall rebounding battle 52-37. Sorry, I'm a bit heated about that one because in the fourth quarter, it felt like they could not snag a rebound to save their lives. And it felt like that was one of the big reasons that the Mavs kind of fought their way back into the game and, you know, made a game of it. The Rockets had an 18-point lead going into the fourth quarter. Or not, maybe not going in, but right at the top of the fourth quarter. They had an 18-point lead and basically watched it dwindle and go away because they had a defensive rating of 150 in the fourth quarter. That's insane. They really did fall asleep at the wheel in the fourth. But look, a win is a win. I'm still going to gripe about some of the issues with this team because we kind of have to. But at the same time, Harden found his three-point shot again. He got to the line. Even though he got stuffed at the basket like three or four times, he was trying and his effort level looked better. His defense was still questionable at points in the game because obviously the mobility is not there right now. So it's understandable. But there were some defensive plays that just were lack of awareness versus lack of mobility. And that's always going to be one of my biggest gripes with James is that he has a lack of awareness on defense at times. Russell Westbrook poured in 32 points himself, 32 points, 6 boards, 9 assists, 3 steals. James also had 4 steals, so they were both active with their hands in the passing lanes in this one. Eric Gordon dropped in 17 points, just 6 of 13 shooting overall, but 3 of 8 from behind the arc. And then Ben McLemore was huge off the bench, especially in that first quarter, was lighting it up. But 13 points, 3 of 6 three-point shooting overall, had a monster jam off of an alley-oop toss by Russell Westbrook in transition, which I think was the play of the game, and I think many of you would agree with me. That dunk was probably the highlight of the entire game, at least for me it was. I really enjoyed that. So we'll get more on this loss and some other thoughts that I have about specifically PJ Tucker. I'm a little worried about, and I'm a little, you know, frustrated obviously with the small ball lineup that Mike D'Antoni has decided to employ in the absence of Clint Capella, and we'll get more on that in just a minute, so do not go anywhere. And we are back in here for our second segment at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, talking about the Rockets' 128-121 victory over the Dallas Mavericks here in Houston, improving the team to 30-18 on the season. Mavericks fall to 29-19, moving the Rockets into sole possession of the fifth seed in the Western Conference, comfortably 2 games back of the Jazz and 1 game ahead of the Mavericks. So I mentioned it at the end of segment one. But here's my thing about Mike D'Antoni and this small ball lineup, which, a quick anecdote, per Elias Sports, the Rockets are the first team to play an entire game without a player listed taller than 6'6 since the Knicks did it on January 31st of 1963 against the Chicago Zephyrs in a neutral site game in Syracuse. It's been over 60 years? Hang on. 1963, 37, 50 years. It's been more than 50 years since that's happened. I'm sorry. What excuse is there? Look, and obviously we clamor for Hartenstein all the time, right? Like, you know, Hartenstein has shown that he can play. And this would have been a great game because I feel like Hartenstein, of all the bigs in the NBA that Hartenstein could match up with, I feel like he matches up pretty well with Kristaps Porzingis. Like, I'm sorry. It makes sense. Porzingis isn't exactly, you know, weighty like maybe Gobert or Embiid. So he's not going to get thrown around, or Steven Adams for that matter, you know, guys that are like traditional big-bodied centers. So it's not like Hartenstein's going to get bullied down low by KP, but he's also, but KP isn't also this, you know, uber athletic or really fast center that Hartenstein's got to chase around. I feel like this would have been a great matchup to kind of see what more you could get out of him in a true, you know, mano a mano matchup. Hartenstein versus Porzingis, Latvia versus Germany, I don't know. But we didn't get that. Hartenstein played 0 minutes. The starters all played a crap ton of minutes. Rivers played 28 off the bench. McLemore had 15 and Cephalosha had 14. And here's where I come from with this, right? So the Rockets didn't give up a single offensive rebound in the first quarter, right? That's a pretty good stat. That's impressive. You play an under 6'6 lineup the whole game and you don't give up a single offensive rebound in the first quarter. The Mavs had 14 missed shots, didn't give up a single offensive rebound. That's not half bad. That's pretty good. And you know, you want to know why that was capable, why they were able to do that? It's because you got fresh legs in the first quarter. You know what happens as you play the game more and more and more as you, you know, get to the second, the third, the fourth quarter, the final frame? You lose your legs. You start to get tired. And suddenly, the guys that are out there that are 6'5 and 6'6 and half a foot shorter than the tallest player on the Mavericks, or sometimes even a foot shorter in the case of maybe Westbrook or McLemore or some of the 6'3 guys when you've got a 7'3 Kristaps Porzingis out there, you can't jump anymore. Your legs are tired. You're going to get out-rebounded. So again, the Mavs had zero offensive boards in the first quarter. They had six in the second quarter, and they had eight over the rest of the rest of the game. I can't remember where the, I don't have the stats in front of me to see how many rebound offensive boards they got in the third and fourth quarter specifically, but obviously the Mavericks figured it out. They put their guys in the right spots and then passed at the Rockets. Just, they didn't have enough juice to keep doing this. Like, I understand rebounding by committee. It's possible if you do it, if you set up your guys in the right spots, and if you make it kind of the team memo, the team motto, whatever you want to call it, hey guys, we're going to play a bunch of short players. Short, unathletic guys. So we need to all rebound as a group, as a team. Nobody can take off in transition. We need to make sure we secure the rebound and then get in transition. That's fine. I understand that. But you can only do that for certain stretches of the game and not when you're running your starting lineup ragged. Eric Gordon was the only starter that didn't play more than 35 minutes. Russell Westbrook played 40. Daniel House Jr. played 38. Harden, as labored as he's been, you know, because he really doesn't look right. When you watch him when he's not actively, like, dribbling the basketball or, you know, actively involved in a play, just watch him walking around on the court. Does not look right. PJ Tucker, 36 minutes. And I could have sworn, maybe I'm wrong about this, but I could have sworn Mike D'Antoni said that he was going to do his best to keep PJ Tucker at about 30 minutes a game. And specifically on PJ Tucker, look, I love the guy. He is heart and soul, grit and grind, one of the better defenders on the team, but PJ is 34 years old, man. They have to find a way to limit his minutes. The same way that Westbrook is on this load management plan, which honestly is keeping him fresh and is probably one of the reasons that he's, you know, been able to be on this tear as of late, because he's got fresher legs than he's had in years. Partially because he doesn't have to be the guy every night. Well, he kind of has been during James Harden's slump. But before that, he didn't have to be the guy every single night. The team didn't live or die with Russell Westbrook. And so I think that's kind of attributing or kind of helping that cause there. But with PJ Tucker, I think that he can still be a valuable contributor to a team, even a starter. He can still be the starter for this team, but you have to find somebody to give him some decent backup minutes. Because the fact that he's playing, you know, over 30 minutes a game, one, his offensive contributions just aren't enough. And it'd be nice to have a 3/4 that you can slot in behind PJ Tucker to basically be your on-off switch. You know, they kind of have that with Austin Rivers to an extent and Ben McLemore. Those are kind of two very different players, right? Ben McLemore gives you a whole lot of offense, a lot of shooting, maybe not as much dribble driving. And then Austin Rivers, who has picked up his shooting as of late, so he's not quite the one-sided option that maybe PJ Tucker is. But imagine having a 3/4 that was, you know, a three-point specialist or somebody that you just slot in. You're like, you know what? It's the end of the game. We need some buckets. The defense doesn't necessarily matter at this point as long as he can hold his own. you slot him in for PJ, or you slot him in the points of the game where the defense isn't super necessary. Maybe, you know, throughout the first three quarters or so, and then PJ is your closer, right? Because he's the guy who you can still trust to hit a three-point corner shot, but he's also the guy who can help you lock down the other team on the defensive side of the basketball. I don't know. I'm ranting and raving because it's just frustrating the times where PJ gets the ball and is unable to do anything with it because he is a very one-dimensional offensive player. He added that little kind of baby hook shot, put shot, floater thing to his repertoire, but it's not consistent. It's not reliable. He can't really take anybody off the dribble. Again, I love PJ Tucker. I really do. But he shouldn't be playing over 30 minutes a game, and the Rockets need another power forward that can, you know, spell him just a little bit. And then past that, you know, again, I'm impressed by James Harden being able to haul down 16 rebounds, but there were distinct points in the game, especially in that fourth quarter, where you're just watching the Rockets, you know, this small team get out-rebounded by the Mavericks, and that was a big part of their comeback in the fourth quarter. And again, to have Isaiah Hartenstein just sitting over there, wasting away on the bench, has me so confused. I genuinely don't understand Mike D'Antoni's reasoning. And I know part of it is, oh, well, you know, they want to provide the spacing for Russell Westbrook to be able to do what he does and, you know, drive the ball into the basket. But he can still do that even with a traditional five on the court. Because you know what? If the center comes off of the five, whether it's Capella or whether it's Hartenstein, if the center comes off the five to be able to help on Westbrook, Westbrook is a good enough passer to be able to toss a little shovel pass over to the center or even lob it over the top of the defense, and suddenly you're still getting 2 points. So I don't completely buy into the fact that for Russell Westbrook to do what he's currently doing, that he needs to have a five-out offense. Yes, it helps for stretches, but to go an entire game without a traditional center, you got the win, but let's face it, if Luka had played this game, I feel like there's not a chance in hell that the Rockets would have won this one. There were so many different defensive lapses, and these are defensive lapses that happen all over the place, and they happen because you're not playing a traditional big who can help kind of contest shots in the paint. One of the reasons that the Rockets give up so many freaking wide open three-point corner shots is because what happens is the ball handler drives the ball in, right? And the Rockets, because they have no size sitting back in the paint to be able to help on these drives where their perimeter defense is already suspect, because they have no size back in the paint, whoever's guarding the wings has to leak in towards the paint to be able to help on the ball handler. And as soon as that happens, it's almost always a kick out for a three-point shot, or it's a kick out to the corner and then one more pass back off to the wing for a wide open three-point shot. It's not hard to beat the Rockets defense because there's three distinct areas that they struggle in. They struggle in perimeter defense, and then their rotations aren't crisp or clean, but there's stretches where they do play good defense, which is why it's frustrating. And a lot of it leads to the first action, right? If you let the ball handler just drive in and penetrate with ease, then it completely crumples the rest of your defense. But not having a big back there as your safety net, you see it a lot with Clint Capella when he's on the court. When Capella's out there, the Rockets, you know, they can kind of get away with not being the best at perimeter defense because Capella can be back there to contest shots. But then it's up to the ball handler of the opposing team to be able to decide, okay, can I actually finish over Capella or do I need to dish the ball to the big? And then we see that quite a bit where Capella is expected to do everything, where he's expected to contest the shot and get back in time to rebound the ball over the big. And that was working during the stretch where Capella was playing like Dennis Rodman, averaging, you know, 20 and 20 for, what was it, 5, 6, 7 games in a row, whatever it was. That was working, but Capella's been hurt. He's got the heel injury. So he can't quite pull it all together the same way that he was earlier this season. He is a defensive anchor, and there were some rumors that came out about the Rockets and their, you know, the supposed interest from the Atlanta Hawks in Clint Capella. I'm not fully on the bandwagon of trading Capella just yet because, again, you got to remember what he did do earlier this season before he had the heel injury. He is a great young center, and imagining him playing at the best of his ability alongside this new version, this evolved version of Russell Westbrook, along with the James Harden that we had earlier this season, that's a team that can probably make some noise, along with Eric Gordon playing as consistent as he's been since coming back from injury, Rivers, who's been great since coming back from his thumb injury. the Rockets are a team that have a lot of upside because we've seen these flashes of brilliance, but it's just about putting all the little pieces together and getting it to mesh and work as one, which they haven't been able to do because injuries suck. And Capella's been hurt. Harden's playing hurt right now. Gordon missed a chunk of the season. Westbrook played the start of the season hurt. But for all of that noise, right, they're sitting in the fifth spot. So still a long ways to go, but they are in the fifth seed right now, just a couple games back of the Jazz, who have faltered quite a bit after their, you know, 19-2 streak that they were on. So there's still some hope. There's still a chunk of hope that they can get a, you know, a top four seed, get some home court advantage for the playoffs. And seriously, they can make some noise as long as they right some of these mistakes that they've got going on. Final thoughts on this one here in just a second, so don't go anywhere. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, discussing the Rockets' 128-121 win over the Dallas Mavericks. Now look, I was a bit frustrated at some of the issues that were still present in this win in the first couple segments, and I think rightfully so. I think that it's still important to be able to point out some of the bad things, even in the wins, but I want to end things on a happier note, on a good note. And so with that, Russell Westbrook, look, Westbrook has been uber efficient as of late. This wasn't one of his more extremely efficient outings. He was 13 of 28 from the floor, so 32 points, 6 rebounds, 9 assists, had a few steals, just one turnover, so that was pretty nice, 6 of 7 from the charity stripe. But it felt like he basically missed like all the mid-range shots, or all the shots that he took that weren't directly at the cup, he missed. But overall, I think that he kind of realized that as the game progressed, and then he kind of, it was kind of an on-again, off-again thing, because in the fourth quarter, he started to take some more middies as well, which is a bit frustrating given how he was shooting them earlier in the game. But still, 13 of 28 overall, you live with that from Russell Westbrook. Still only attempted one three-pointer, which is, again, huge. He didn't, you know, try to fall in love with a three-point shot to, you know, create some separation between the two teams. So still want to give Russ some credit there for the way that he has changed this game, his game, to adapt to this Houston Rockets team. On top of that, Daniel House Jr. had a pretty strong evening. 14 points, had a few boards, had a couple steals, a couple blocks, had his hands in the passing lanes, 4 of 6 from behind the arc, and 5 of 10 overall shooting. A really strong evening from Daniel House Jr., who is still kind of fighting to get, well, you know, he's got his starting job back for now if Clint Capella is out, because Mike D'Antoni said post-game that as long as Clint Capella is out, PJ Tucker will be the starting five, which kind of has me wanting to pull my hair out. Bit frustrating there, but the starting lineup, as long as Capella will be out, has Tucker at the five, House at the four, and then it looks like Gordon, Westbrook, and Harden. So that's going to be the starting five, at least temporarily, while Capella is still out. So Daniel House has his starting job back for now. But the way that he's been playing, if he can get back to the Daniel House that we had at the start of the year, he may earn his starting job back overall, even once Clint Capella has returned, seeing as how Eric Gordon kind of took that spot from him. Past that, we already mentioned Ben McLemore a little bit, but solid evening from him. Austin Rivers, 9 points, 3 of 4 from behind the arc, had a few rebounds and a couple assists, a steal. Some really solid play from Rivers. And then even Tabo Cephalosha, in his limited 14 minutes, had a couple points, had 5 rebounds, 3 assists. Tabo's been showing that he can be a contributor off the bench, so I'm happy that at least D'Antoni has branched out the rotation a bit. Obviously, he's still running just an 8-man rotation, but knowing that Tabo Cephalosha can be a contributor when needed is kind of a nice little added bonus to this group of guys. Now, one thing that I was looking at is, you know, as I'm recording this early February 1st, so we are now out of the month of January, which, let's face it, January has been hell for this Rockets team. Rockets went 6-7 in the month of January. So over a third of their current losses came in that 1 month. So hopefully, maybe just it was the curse of January. January 2020 sucked for a whole lot of other reasons. Australia was on fire. There's coronavirus. We lost Kobe. Like I'm saying, January 2020 was a pretty awful month. So maybe moving forward, the Rockets can get out of this funk. they can get back to playing the brand of basketball that they know that they can play, care a bit more about defense, get James Harden, you know, right, get him healthy, get Capella right and healthy, and, you know, make a strong push headed into the All-Star break and, on the other side of the All-Star break, as they've done the last couple seasons in a row. The last couple seasons, the Rockets have made significant pushes after the All-Star break, and I think this team maybe has it in them again. They're not as defensive-oriented as the past couple of seasons, so I'm a little concerned there as to whether or not they actually have that push in them, but it'll be exciting to see what happens. And then on top of that, there's the trade deadline coming up right around the corner, less than a week away. So whether or not the team makes an acquisition, whether they make a move, maybe they follow up on some of the rumors regarding Clint Capella and the Atlanta Hawks. Maybe they don't. Maybe the Robert Covington trade rumors resurface. All of that, which we will be covering in detail next week. But for this episode, this February 1st episode, I think this is where we will break things. As always, thank you all so much for tuning in. Again, if you want more content before our next show, I'm on Twitter at JT Gatlin. And of course, our show is on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. There's also Facebook, which can be found at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, the website LockedOnRockets.com, and of course, the email address LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. But again, for this February 1st episode, this is where we break. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope to have you back again very, very soon right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.